Everybody, welcome to another episode of Sink or Swim. My name is Christina, and today's episode is going to be about sub-eye rotations, or array rotation, or audition rotations. There's many different names for what we're going to be discussing today. I have a group of wonderful co-students with me, and I'll let them introduce themselves.
My name is Andrew. I am also a fourth-year medical student from Nova Southeastern University. I am applying and interested in general surgery.
My name is Brittany. I'm also a fourth-year student, and I am applying to emergency medicine.
My name is Nicole, and I am also applying into emergency medicine.
And once again, this is Christina. I'm going into neurology. And so today, some of our information that we discuss will be in general for anybody who's pursuing an OA rotation, but there will also potentially be some specialty specific knowledge and takeaways and experiences that we share. So if there's, something for you to learn about each specialty, then it'll definitely come up today. And so we can go ahead and start by just defining what these terms are. So a sub-I is short for a sub-internship. And this is essentially a course that you can take in your fourth year. And it's usually the level of responsibility that comes with that class or course that you're taking is what makes it a sub-internship. So for these types of 4 week or 2 week rotations, you're supposed to be acting like what an intern would do. And that means taking on all the big responsibilities of managing your own patients, entering in orders if they let you enter orders, coming up with diagnostic plans, and definitely following up on the patients that are assigned to you. Another word for this would be an away rotation or an audition rotation. And essentially, they're basically where you're going to another program or facility, another institution, and you are trying to show off your skills and kind of, market yourself as potentially a good resident, future resident for this program. Of course, you can do that type of work at your own home institution. There can be home sub-eyes or home audition rotations. It's really just the technicalities of the word. But again, if you are interested in going into your own home program, then you can pursue that level of coursework at your school if it's available to you. So we're going to be talking about a couple things in this section, like, when you should apply, what programs you should apply to for away rotations and things like that, and kind of figuring out the logistics. So if anybody wants to go ahead and share some thoughts about when they applied and when they started thinking about away rotations.
I actually think it's important to mention, not only are you going to these rotations to show off your skills and your abilities, but you're also going to these rotations to see if they're a good fit. So you're not only showing yourself off, but you're also trying to see, is this place going to be somewhere where I can potentially envision myself working and being a resident? So just keep that in mind as you're going through these sub-eyes. And as far as what you were saying before about some information about when to apply and the timing, one of the best things you can do is definitely apply early. It's kind of hard sometimes, especially if you're in between specialties and you don't know, where you're going to end up. You need to start looking at this stuff very early, and there's different programs you can, there's different sites. One of the big ones is VSLO, so VSLO as we call it. You go on that site and it tells you all the available OA rotations. It's kind of a platform where you apply to them through this. Tells you all the deadlines, all the available ones, and what programs are available. So definitely planning early is key when it comes to
How much
these.
time would you say? What months? What time during your third or fourth year?
So they open, VSLO usually opens around January with some of the programs opening right around then, and then some might open a little bit later towards March. A lot of these happen on rolling basis, and they're not really necessarily screening you to see if you would be a good fit for residency there or anything like that before making the decision of if you can rotate there. So sometimes you are submitting things like a resume or a personal statement that might go along with this, But whether or not they actually take that into account is variable. A lot of them are just first come, first serve type of things. So applying basically as soon as it opens is super helpful for getting the program that you want to. And some of them aren't on VSLO either. A lot of programs just have their own application system. So if you notice a program you want isn't on there, just Google, that program's name with away rotation, and they might have links on their website.
Yeah, so basically halfway through your third year, about December, January time, you want to start gathering all your important documents that you'll need to submit for these applications. So because you're applying to a new program like system, they will need to have all your immunization form. They'll need your background check. They'll need your like physician annual checkup and stuff like that. So there's a lot of stuff, your IDs and et cetera. So you'll need to kind of start thinking about getting appointments ready for immunizations and, your checkup, et cetera. So it does take some planning for sure. I agree, Nikki. It kind of does like they open up around the absolute earliest, maybe January, February. Those are a few, but then they're really on a rolling basis. So it's up to you as an individual to make sure you are checking the VSLO website or your other websites constantly, as much as you deem is appropriate to make sure you're not missing out on when these things open up. Because Nikki brought up a good point. As much as these away rotations are an experience for you to showcase yourself as a future resident, a lot of the times the way they evaluate you for those spots is like first come, first serve. Just whoever submitted their application first, right when it opened up, they just want to give that to you. There are others I've had to submit, like why this program statements or why neurology, why this specialty, et cetera. And I will say putting in a little bit of effort, I think, did pay off for those. So don't just do like a generic why. Sometimes it does matter, especially if it's for a program that you really want. Put a little bit of your, start thinking about like what your ERAS residency personal statement would look like. And then maybe riff a little bit off that.
Some of them require letters of recommendation as well, so you might need to start obtaining those in November, December as well.
Yeah, echoing what has already been said, a lot of the times they are first come, first serve, and the person that's actually choosing whether you get it or not is just like a coordinator or someone like not even who is that clinical, so who like
Who are still very
knows,
important
of
and are
course.
parts of the program, but it's more of an administrative task than like a judgment call per se on a clinical.
They're not evaluating like a whole application, like this isn't the ERAS or residency application, so it is important to be there early. That being said, there are plenty of programs that don't open up right away, and you'll see like their outdated information. And so you just have to kind of be on top of it when they do get updated and when they do have spots that open up.
I was gonna say, no, although that it's a lot first come, first serve, like Christina was saying, put a little bit of effort because some of them, might not, they might be first come, first serve, but they might be reading through some of this stuff and you want to make sure you leave a good impression because if this is somewhere that you're gonna be applying for later, through ERAS or residency CAS, this is somewhere where you want to leave a good impression. So make sure, your personal statement or anything that you're writing, any of those letter of intents that you're writing, that, they are reflective of you in a positive manner.
The other thing I was going to say is also like when you're deciding what or like which program to do, it's very it's an opportunity for you to kind of branch out if you come from like a smaller school or like a newer school like we did. This is a play a chance for you to go to like a big academic center and see kind of what a different sort of residency environment would look like. So don't just look at the programs that are immediately around you. Like you can.
Yeah, I'm gonna echo that highly because we don't have like a lot of neurology connections per se. And the general advice for neurology applicants for residency is to that you don't really need an away to do well during interview season and to get a lot of interview invites. I would say that my aways really helped me, and I would encourage anybody who feels like they need to branch out to apply for those aways. And also to say that sometimes you'll get an acceptance for an away, and then you might get later down the road another acceptance that clashes with that date. So as you're getting and confirming these dates that you want to go do these away rotations, make sure you're taking yourself out of the applications for other programs, because then you might find yourself face to face with another program saying, "Hey, we would like for you to come for this date," and then you have to say, "Well, I'm sorry, I wasn't on top of my stuff and took myself out of the dates I was no longer available for." And that kind of it's a bad picture to leave people with. So I would just say keep track of it.
Going off of that too, make sure that the places that you're gonna go to, that you can see yourself possibly going to that area, possibly moving to that area, or if you're looking for somewhere that you really want to consider for residency, make sure it's somewhere that you can actually picture yourself actually living. Think about your surroundings, think about the place that you're. Are you have any support around you? These are going to help you narrow down where you want to do your sub-Is, unless you're purely going just for an educational purpose or just to further, your own education and your own experience, then that's fine. But these are very, you only have a limited amount of time and a limited amount of ability to do sub-Is. So when you're, we want to be kind of picky as where you go, where you do these sub-Is. And one of the things that helped me was figuring out where I would really consider myself going to residency.
Yeah, it's super important to kind of think about where you want to go for residency or where you're going to be applying. Because I also think in some cases you might need to be realistic and not shoot for top programs. It could be very fun to go rotate at a top program, but you need to consider like, is this program even realistically going to interview me or consider me highly on their rank list? I think a lot of people were discussing when they were thinking about applying, should I apply to a big name like Harvard so that I have a letter of recommendation from Harvard, even though I know I am not the kind of applicant that they would eventually match. And most of the advice I got was no, don't rotate somewhere that you're not going to potentially match, because like what are you ultimately getting out of that? You could get great letters of recommendation from other programs that are more realistic reaches for you. But you also can take this time to shoot your shot, because a good away rotation can absolutely make you match somewhere.
And a bad experience can also
Yeah.
hinder. So you want to
Yes.
also be careful because you think about these sub-Is as well as a month long or however long the rotation is, audition. So every single day you are showing up, you need to be on point. You are being looked at an interview. It's a month long interview. You're being looked at consistently every day. Every day you show up, how you show up, make sure you're on point for it. So because you don't want it to work against you or not in your favor if it's somewhere that you really want to go, so just make sure that if you're applying early, I actually give it the advice for me, like I said before, the advice I give is to apply early. I have made the mistake of waiting because I was still on the fence about where I was gonna do my sub-Is. I didn't really know where I wanted to do them for a while, and I waited a long time, and then I was left at the end scrambling, emailing programs last minute to see if I would get a shot. And there was a block of time in my schedule where I didn't know if I was going to have a sub-I for then, and it was very stressful at that time. And I wish that I would have just applied earlier and not have gone through that. So that's definitely the one of the biggest points for me.
So how, taking that into consideration, how many sub-Is did we all actually do, or away rotations? So I ended up doing three. I canceled my first one in order to extend some step studying time, which ended up working out in my favor, but I did three. I did 2 month-long ones and then 1 2-week one.
I did also three. All three of mine were month-long sub-Is. The one thing I will say is that all three of them were through BISLO, and one of them did not directly overlap with the calendar that our school provides. So I actually ended up losing 1 week before the sub-I and then 1 week after. I still believe it was valuable. So, if you're thinking about like credits and what you need to graduate and being on track, it depends on your school, obviously. But I think the educational experience and value of a sub-I does supersede the potential to kind of make you wait a week or start your next rotation 2 weeks later or something like that. So that's, I did want to bring that up now.
And is 3 the recommended amount for a general surgery?
The recommended amount actually for general surgery, it's not like a, the program directors that I've talked to, and from what I know, obviously, it's not like entirely, there's not like a magic number. Some schools don't even recommend doing sub-Is at all, regardless of the specialty. I think that for surgery specifically, from what I know, they do tend to enjoy seeing sub-Is just because it's a way for you to get your name out and get letters of rec from other surgeons. And surgery is still very much a very heavy, it's who you know, not, you know, what you know. So having good letters of recommendation from surgeons that may have maybe involved with other facilities is a definitely a an advantage that I think.
Yeah. So for emergency medicine, we don't have letters of recommendations. We have what are called SLOWEs, and we'll talk about those a bit later. But the recommendation for emergency medicine is to get 2 SLOWEs, which you can get one per program. So for emergency medicine, the recommendation is to do at least one home rotation if you have it, and one away, or 2 away rotations, that you get 2 SLOWEs. And you want those done before ERAS or residency CAS is done. So having them done kind of by your last one being done by August, so that those letters are in time. I wound up doing 3, one home and 2 away rotations, and I felt pretty good about that amount.
Yeah, same for me. I did one home and 2 away. And I did them fairly, the 2 away I did fairly close because my plan was to stay pretty local. That worked for me, so I did them fairly close to where I was. So it's very individualized, depending on where you see yourself, you know, that can guide your choice.
And it's worth noting that these all cost money. It costs money to apply. And then if you're going out of state or far away from your house, you also need to potentially find housing, which can cost a lot. You might need to pay for plane tickets or gas to get there, getting food while you're there. All of this is very expensive. So that's definitely a limitation that plays into how many you're able to ultimately do.
Yeah, my take on that is I was lucky enough to get, I applied for a scholarship with the American Academy of Neurology, and I got a diversity visiting student scholarship. So they give you $2,000 in order to pay for cost of living, transportation, and everything. It was a huge lifesaver for me, and I recommend everybody check out their specialty specific association or academy that. Sometimes there's a lot of funding for students, and then there's also general scholarships out there that, still exist. If there's any way to maybe talk to your school financing, see if they have money, or even if there's like a club budget that isn't being used, maybe you can find a way to rework that for a student who's going to do that specialty specific away rotation. But
And
it definitely is a real cost.
a lot of programs have scholarships as available as well, so you can apply to do a rotation with that specific scholarship for their program. I do hear the advice a lot that you should potentially start saving for these during your first year of medical school with loans, putting aside money with the knowledge that fourth year can be very expensive. You have to pay for your ERAS applications. You might have to pay to do interviews and these away rotations. So just keeping in mind that this is something you should have on the horizon, starting very early.
yeah, true that. Fourth year is pricey. It creeps up on you.
Yes, it definitely does. So let's transition into one of the most important topics for your away rotations. How should you be behaving on these? How can we be the most professional selves we can be? Because, like we said, you're being evaluated constantly to see if you're a good fit for this program. And if you're beyond that, if you're a good fit for any program in this specialty, because that kind of thing will show up in your letters of recommendation or SLOWE as well. So, one of the things early that you need to be aware of with professionalism is even just during the application process, you need to be professional. If a program emails you and says, "Are you available for this date?" they could be making note of how quickly you're getting back to them. If you're rejecting a program offer, like Christina mentioned, are you withdrawing that within a timely manner, or are you making other applicants have to wait to take that that time up as well. And then being on time for
Okay.
your rotations is incredibly important as well.
Yeah, actually, and make sure going back to the emails, check your spam folders, because that happened to me for my first sub I. The program director sent an email, but it went to my spam folder. I had no idea. I was just, living my life, waiting to figure out what the schedule was and waiting for updates, and all of a sudden I get an email, another email saying, "Oh, hey, you're the only one that didn't respond. Please respond to this." And I was like, "Oh no," because it made me look like I just ignored an email, and it's a bad look. And I had to explain it was in my spam folder, of course, but it just make sure you're checking those things, those little things that you might forget. They can make a difference in how you're perceived. So, and going on timeliness, yes, be on time. You never know when someone's watching. I mean, it happened to me on a sub I where I was late. And that ended up getting on my letter of recommendation. I learned from that you just have to make sure you're on time. You don't know who's watching you at what moment. And it can affect you.
I was going to say that during the onboarding process, you're also going to have to do a lot of trainings for either their electronic health record or security and safety training for that program or institution. Make sure you start those early because those are full of just problems with not loading, or you don't have the certificate done, or it's not working on your computer, and you don't want to be that person that's emailing 2 or 3 days before you're set to go. And you've had reminder emails and you're like, oh, this isn't working on my end. And then you like have to go through the whole gamut. So I think just like being really anticipatory of every step of the process, if you're not that sort of person before this process, like it's going to be a huge change in accountability for your professional image for sure. And it does, I think it does make a difference. I've had really great interactions with program coordinators that I think have paid off, and they like you can tell in the language that they use and in things that like it's reflected back to you the way that you are acting and the professionalism that you exude. So don't think that just because like you're a fourth year and this is an away and you're done with your core requirements that it's all easy breezy. This is the time to definitely not let your guard down. And this is the time to make impressions and make good moves for yourself that will pay off. That's my take.
Yeah, I can't. I'm gonna be quick because I largely echoing everything that's already been said. But one of the things I wanted to bring up was for every single one of the general surgery rotations or sub eyes that I've been on, you start out with just mandatory scrub training, and that is entirely done via the program coordinator, and you can't get away from it. So, just emailing and just saying, I'm available these days, or just like. It relieves a lot of burden on them, and they in turn will thank you. Like every single time I went to an OA rotation, the program coordinator was the first person I talked to, and they were always like, "Oh, thank you for responding," or "Thank you for being flexible," because at the end of the day, they're also trying to make things work. And it's like Brittany said earlier, you are on a month-long interview. It is some programs and some sub-Is and away rotations will not interview you for ERAS, and we'll kind of talk about that a little bit later. But like I did an away rotation, and I don't have an interview from that program because they straight up told me like, "This is your month-long interview."
You
So
made that sound so bad. You made that sound
yeah, I
like
know. I was like, "What do you mean they didn't
oh.
interview you? How could they do that?"
They will not interview. And I went on a
Yeah.
summer and I didn't get an interview.
It's
Oh,
because you
not
did
for
interview
crap.
the whole
For the
month.
audience listening, he absolutely catfished y'all to death. Oh my God, so bad.
I
Yeah,
wasn't
you got
trying to
me
make
for
you
a
sound
second. You
bad.
got me for a second. I was like, what?
They told me, please. They told me right up front during the during on the first week of the sub I. They said, "Please be aware, we don't interview our sub I's because we treat this as a month-long interview." So that's the point I was trying to make
We still got interviewed.
to the audience. What?
Yeah, and ours
Well,
interviewed us.
oh, okay.
But
One of
yeah.
them though was really chill. Like one of them was like, "Oh, we're just gonna figure this residency cast thing together. This is not like this is very informal." It was very informal, because they already got to know you, and you've worked with this team for a long time, and you've worked with the program director, hopefully. So it's a little bit less a little bit less of pressure because everyone already knows how well you work.
Yeah. What are the red flags you hear from residents, attendings, Reddit, whatever? What are the red flags on rotations? Things you absolutely should not do in terms of professionalism.
You should never, ever, ever talk poorly about a patient or another resident or anyone. I think,
Even
like,
if people around you are doing it,
yeah,
don't do
the
it.
biggest thing you can do is just show that you're going to, like, create drama or talk poorly behind someone's back on their behalf. And that's, like, just the easiest way for a program to be like, oh, yeah, it's like, they don't even have to justify it. They're just like, we just don't want you around. We don't want that energy around.
Yeah, that is huge in emergency medicine because we see a lot of like interesting patients. There's definitely can be like an urge to gossip or share funny stories about patients, and just be aware that even though the residents might be talking poorly about a patient or nurses might be, that you should not be engaging in that. Let them do it, just next to them. Don't engage.
Yeah, remember, like, don't be too quick to be so familiar with the resident and the group that you're with. You are always still a potential applicant. You are not in yet. Even if you're working there side by side and you share lots of laughs, you're still there to impress. And down the road, if they share an anecdote about something that happened and then they say, oh, the student was doing that too with you, or oh, the student, like, how did the student feel? And then all of a sudden, it's like, it's kind of put up to question. So I think always erring on the side of caution, and always a huge thing like social determinants of health, always keep that in mind because a lot of things that we see are affected, like health outcomes are affected by things that are out of our patient's control. And so you never want to, like Nikki was saying, kind of make up a backstory or an anecdote about, patients with different circumstances and things that you see. There's a lot that goes into play. So just, keep an open mind and always, give the or the subtle nod, and don't try to be too controversial during these processes.
Another thing is,
Awesome.
when you're on your sub eyes, it's really difficult to balance showing your abilities and your knowledge and impressing your team and your attendings. But you have to be careful not to do that at the expense of others. So you have to remember that you're on a team and that you're part of a team of residents, a team of interns, team of attendings. And although you want to show off that you know things and you want to impress people, you have to do that in a way that's not stepping on anyone else's toes because it's going to look bad if you do it that way. It's going to look like you're willing to put other people down to get ahead. So you have to kind of navigate that and learn how to balance that.
That's a great transition into like the next little segment that we wanted to talk about, which is just like kind of a little bit of a mindset shift that you have to get into, because you are no longer just the M3 student there for a grade. You are now supposed to be the one that goes above and beyond, kind of in all scenarios. Because ultimately, like you want to show them that you are dedicated both to the field and to this program, especially if you're on a sub I there. So what are the things that you guys have picked up on your sub-I's that you do or that you've maybe noticed other sub-I's doing that you're like, oh, like this is something an attending wants or this is something that they respond well to?
Yeah, I think
Anticipate.
the yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. The residents
Anticipate.
want you to be helpful. They want you to make their life easier. If you are a burden to the resident because you're asking them questions constantly, how do I do this? Or like you just need constant supervision, that's not really helping them. Whereas, if you're in surgery, I'm sure if you are taking the initiative to go change dressings, do the little things, empty the drains, take notes, go make sure all the pre-op things are done. I'm sure those are the kinds of things that are helpful there. In emergency medicine, it could be like following up on patients, checking on the labs, the scans, making sure the patient is updated about what information has already come in because they're getting those results right to their phone oftentimes. So being there to answer the patient's questions, things that make the residents have to do less work, they absolutely love that.
Yeah, and be aware that you're not going to be given all the tools on your first day. A lot of times you'll step into a sub-I and you're going to feel very overwhelmed, very lost. There's not going to be like a clear direction or clear like steps or things that you need to do. So you need to kind of get out of that mindset of I'm going to be given exact directions as to what I need to do on the sub-I. That's not going to happen. You're going to have to make your own way and figure out where you're needed, how you can step in, and how you can make everyone's life easier, because that's what they're going to remember more. It's not how many questions you can answer. It's more of how did you help the team? That's what's going to stick with everyone's minds.
I totally agree with that. I think that if you're going, well, I have two important things, but the leading off of yours was like being super adaptable and reading the situation and saying, how can I add to this situation in a helpful way is so important because that's going to pay off for you in return later. If you are going to see a non-English speaking patient and you read, you know on the list where you are and you're anticipating going to this patient's room, if you go grab like the interpreter iPad or if there's an in-person interpreter and you excuse yourself and go grab them in time, they're going to be like, wow, I love you. You are like totally anticipating needs. You're on it. You understand what's going on and you are just trying to make this process faster. Things like printing out lists in advance for your residents or checking on labs and important things for your patients. Things like just making sure that you take the time, even if it's not spoken, but checking in on all of your patients, even if you might like skip them that day, for example, in a specialty service. For neurology, sometimes we might not see all of our patients every day, but if you're a student and you were assigned somebody, I just highly suggest you kind of see everybody. Because at the end of the day, like if you're the physician, like putting yourself years in advance, if you're the physician taking care of that patient, if something happens, it is still on you, technically. I mean, primary or not, but there is still that role of like, it is your responsibility. And then I will say the second thing I wanted to touch on was hopefully these away rotations are obviously going to be in the fields that you want to pursue. All my away rotations were neurology, so I loved getting to do neurology all the time. I basically had a whole neuro field second half of my year, which was like, okay, I was like, I totally know I want to do this. I'm practicing with fellow, neurologists and residents and stuff, and like I'm in the place where I belong, and I got that affirmation. And so you should be wanting to learn and to pursue and to be involved. And if you are not, I would ask yourself, what is causing that? Because that could maybe signal that maybe this isn't the specialty for you, and then you kind of learn from that, or maybe it's the program itself or the people in the program, etc. So Brittany's saying a lot about like reflecting on what program is for you and where you want to go. That's kind of a never-ending process throughout this for sure. So you should be excited to learn in your given field.
I think that one thing that was said, and just to say it one more time, they're not judging you based on the knowledge that you have. No one remembers who was the smartest sub-I. They remember who showed up and who had the best attitude. So being able to anticipate things, being reliable in a field like surgery, there are some things that are just very easy to appear helpful, like having gloves when you're checking on a patient in the mornings, or waiting in the OR and just texting the resident, or sometimes the attending, managing the list and making sure things are updated. Other general workflow items like post-op checks, or writing notes, or following things up when you're running the list in the morning and saying we have to do this, the scan needs to get done. Any opportunity where you can be a middleman and potentially cut out miscommunication or things like that, those are what you should be focusing on, because you want them to notice. It's funny, you want them to notice your absence. Like after you leave for the month, you want them to be like, wow, that sub-I was really doing a lot. That's the sentiment you want to have. That's the impact you want to
That's a good
have.
way to put it.
So.
One thing before we leave, I don't want us to leave without saying this. One big professionalism thing in everything, you cannot lie. If you didn't perform an exam maneuver, if you didn't ask a history question, own up to it.
That's so true.
1,000%. I've heard multiple times from many people in all levels of the medical field, the only thing you have to yourself is your word and your reputation with your word. Once you cut that, it is so hard to come back from that. And everybody will accept, even fourth year senior residents, if they didn't do the maneuver, oh well, it was an off day. But you cannot come back from like cutting that integrity of if you say that you did something or that the patient said something that they didn't. Obviously, sometimes patients change their stories. It's a tale of hope. I went at
Yes,
least all
that's happened
the
to us
day.
all the time.
And then they tell the
He's
attendant
tending.
something, but you can swear on your grave that you did the right thing, and everybody understands that.
Then the attending looks at you like that was a very important piece of information, and
Yeah,
I'm like, oh
it
my
happens with
gosh.
all of us. We all do our best, but essentially, honesty is the best policy, and everybody will understand you are still a student as a fourth year, and you're still a student as an intern, and everybody's still a learner. So,
That's so true.
yeah.
No, taking accountability, be accountable, admit when you're wrong, and also don't make excuses. Like, that's a big thing I've seen is someone will ask you, why did you miss this, or why are you late? Or, and you maybe do have valid reasons, but the best thing to do is not sit there and just make excuses as to why something happened. Just own up to the fact that it didn't and fix it. So, hey, I didn't do this, I didn't do the Romberg, which happened to me once on a sub I. I said I did a full neuro exam, but it was an ER patient. I had seen the patient ambulating to the bathroom, and she had a headache, some high blood pressure, and I won't, did a neuro exam, but I didn't do a Romberg. I didn't do the Romberg exam, so I went to the attending and I said that I did a full neuro exam, and she said, "Well, did you do the Romberg?" And I said, "No." She's like, "Then you didn't do a full neuro exam." And I said, "Oh, okay." And then I thought my first thing was going to say, "Well, I just saw the patient ambulating to the bathroom and walking back at her," but I didn't. I sat there and said, "You know what? That's true. That is part of doing a full assessment." So I ran back to the room and I did the Romberg exam, and I made sure that I did every single maneuver I could think of, and came back and said, "Okay, now I completed a full neuro exam." So just make sure that you take accountability and go back and fix it. If you miss something, go back and do
Yeah,
it.
that's when you go grab something for the patient to smell to check their
Yeah, I know.
olfactory
I
one
was
as
doing everything. I was doing all
well.
exams.
So this one's full, all of the cranial nerves.
Cool. Oh, so speaking about that, and just speaking about being the helpful as you can, taking accountability. We also want to transition into talking about how you can be efficient and thorough. Especially, like I said about my neuro exam, being efficient with your exams, being efficient with your presentations. These are something that you're going to learn along the way during your sub-Is, and you'll figure out as you go what different specialties need different things. And also coming up with your differentials and coming up with this. One of the hardest things for me going into my emergency medicine rotations was coming up with the plan. And the assessment and plan, and voicing that to the attending, and making sure that everything that I wanted to do had a reason behind it and had logic behind it. And even if it was wrong, that was okay, right? It's okay to, you're still learning, but that you had a reason behind why you wanted to order that test. That was what was important. And what helped me was a lot of times just writing it out, saying, "I want to order this CT because of this reason." So I'm just not telling the attending I want a CT, and the attending's going, "Why do you want a CT?" And I'm just standing there, not knowing what to say. So that was one of the challenging parts. I don't know if anybody else experienced this during their rotations.
Yeah, some advice I got early on my first away rotation that really helped me in my future ones was to be as specific as possible during your plan, because now we are operating at the level of an M4, which should be at the level of an intern essentially. So we are no longer an M3 saying, I think this patient has a UTI, we should give an antibiotic. Now I have to say, I think this patient has XYZ, this is my differential. And I think we should give ceftriaxone 2 grams for this patient. That kind of puts you a step above where they might be expecting you, because even on I don't know about in other specialties, but in some of my emergency medicine rotations, we were pending orders as well that were then getting signed by the attendings and going out to patients. So knowing, specifically what dose, what medication is the best for this patient. What are the broad spectrum antibiotics for cellulitis? And then being very specific in your presentations, that kind of puts you a step above where everyone else is.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that for surgery specifically, there were many times where it spent your as a sub eye, I was sent to see the consult like ahead of the intern or ahead of the resident. And so I'm presenting sometimes to the resident and sometimes I'm presenting to the attending. And the more information I provide and the more of a, semi-formulated assessment and plan I provide, a lot of the times it was the opportunity for the attending to ask you the question of like, and why do you want to do that? That's where you can really shine. If you can answer, like, if you have an answer for why, even if it's wrong, sometimes, because I presented wrong plans all the time. I wanted to discharge patients that
Me too.
they wanted observation on, and I wanted to do surgery on patients that they wanted observation on.
Yeah,
So it's just like you're constantly getting things wrong, but you're at the point, especially in your training now, where it's okay to get things wrong. I think it's actually better to get things wrong because it and then to not try at all, because I think you then have that benefit of, that's how you learn, that's how you move forward. You have that experience. I remember the wrongs way more than I remember, like, oh yeah, I presented that patient perfectly. It's like, no, I forgot to mention the physical exam. And then after my presentation, the attending's like, did you do a physical exam? And I'm like, oh yes, sir, sorry, abdomen soft, tend soft, non-distended, non-tender, blah, blah, blah. So those are things that, like, those are e easy areas where you can shine in terms of attendings. And yeah, that's what I have to say about that.
Yeah, typically what I found in my experience is that on away rotations, the first day is usually like you observe, and during that time you should take very thorough notes on how the residents present or how other students present, and then the feedback they get from their superiors, because that's really going to inform you how you move forward. And I think good advice is to always start as specific and detailed as possible in your presentation. And then, the attending or resident, usually the attending will be like, I don't need to know that stuff. What's the plan or whatever, or what are your differentials? And then you kind of tailor, like, okay, in the beginning you might go through every step of the neuro exam, and then towards the end of the rotation they might be like, just tell me what was remarkable about the exam, sort of thing. So it's like covering your bases at first, and then you can tailor your presentation to that specialty and that specific attending or subspecialty that you're doing. I think that's super helpful. And that shows that you're listening and learning from your attending and their preferences and trying to make their life easier as well. Because they are using your information at some point to make a clinical decision, and you are really a part of the team at that point and the patient's care.
Think it's different for like emergency medicine. I think maybe Nikki, you're gonna say the same thing about the emergency medicine.
Sorry, I'm coming from a specialty perspective. Not
Efficiency is
primary.
key, and you have to know kind of from the beginning what to omit and what to say. And it takes a special skill, I think, to be able to figure out what is important and what is not, because you're seeing so many patients. They're also like different acuities. You want to make sure if it's something high acuity that that's something that you're putting forward first. A lot of the, background information might not be relevant. So picking out what information is relevant versus what's not, what's important for the attending to know in that moment versus what's not. It's and keeping the presentations short, concise, and important, I think is a key skill to be successful in your sub eyes for emergency medicine. And I think Nikki will second that.
Yeah, absolutely. The more efficient you are in emergency medicine, the smarter you seem. It's almost more thorough that way because they also, like, I think we've all been there where you have an attending and you present and you're like, they're a non-smoker, they have two children. And then you finish the presentation and the attending's like, are they a smoker? And you're like, I just told you that. So, like, honestly, just give them the most important high yield stuff and then let them ask the questions. And you have done a thorough exam in history, but you keep your presentation just the most important information and let them follow up for the nitty-gritty details that they want to hear. It's definitely different there in emergency
Oh,
medicine.
from my experience, they want to know that you know how to do the full history and exam so that when they're like asking questions in the future for a tailored exam, they know other things have been covered, so to speak, once they like trust your
Right.
opinion on presentations and stuff like that. But
Right.
good to know
Yes.
clearly what
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And I think part of it too is navigating how different teams and different attendings work, especially for emergency medicine. Like there's some attendings will want will do different things, like order different tests or maybe not order something else on a different. So anticipating what your attendings and team need, and they're all different, is a skill you pick up, and it's kind of hard when you're changing all the time. So as long as you yourself, when you come up with the things that you want to do, have a reason to back it up, you kind of save yourself that way. Because there's a lot of different attending, especially emergency medicine, that will practice differently. And then you're gonna kind of feel like you're going a little bit, just a little overwhelmed because you're finally learning the style of one attending and getting used to how to present and getting used to the information and what they like to do. And then you're thrown to another attending that's not what they're doing. And then you have to know how to adapt yourself to the different people that you're going to work with.
Yeah. And I will say another thing that you have to keep in mind, especially in emergency medicine, but I assume in other specialties as well, is if you find something abnormal or like we're talking sick versus not sick, if you find something very sick
Right.
that you need to go get someone right
Yeah.
away. I had a patient who I was talking to them. They came in with some like epigastric pain. It sounded most likely like GERD. Someone was getting their vitals while I was talking to them. And on the screen, their blood pressure was like 198 over something. And I was like, all right, what's your past medical history? And they're like, well, I have an aortic aneurysm, and I have one in my chest and one in my belly. And I bolted out of the room, grabbed the attending. She was like, oh, you have to go. This patient's about to leave AMA. And I was like, actually, you're going to sit and listen to me. I gave a 1 minute a one liner presentation. I was like, well, we have a his patient with a history of hypertension and aortic aneurysms, and their blood pressure is 198, and they're having epigastric pain. And that was my presentation. And she was like, all right, labetalol, CTA, run to go see the patient. So definitely, tailor your presentations to the attending, and also make sure if you're finding something abnormal, you are grabbing someone to take care of that patient, because that is a way you build trust as well.
Yep, I had an acute mental status change on someone who was like essentially post-stroke, and so that, you gotta talk about it.
And all of this leads to the conclusion that you will get better at this as you do on other away rotations. Like I improved so much on from my first away to my last away, and I saw it within myself. Another thing that with presentations and with everything, and another thing we can actually talk about a little bit is just kind of that you also will improve on over the course of your away rotations are procedures and just kind of your hands-on preparation, because in away rotations, you're going to be given more responsibility for a specialty like surgery. That generally means you're going to be left to close potentially wounds. You're going to be kind of trusted to do, basic drain care and things like that. And so you want to show that you are prepared and that you are ready. But also, we have to talk about when you don't know what to do and they want you to do it. Like, how do you gracefully kind of say, like, I'm actually not comfortable with what you're asking me. Can you show me? I'm a big proponent of, like, if they ask me to do something I've never done before, I'm always the, well, why don't you show me how to do it this time and I'll do it next time? Because I think, like, if I'm being walked through something the first time, the second time I generally feel very comfortable kind of like taking a crack at it with someone watching and then getting to the point where it's like, okay, he doesn't need to be monitored. He's pulled 10 JP drains this week. I trust him to go do it, and that's what kind of the level you should be at as a sub-I. What do you guys think?
Going on that, actually, so for emergency medicine, they kind of throw you into procedures very quickly. Even if you're like, I've never done this before, they go with you, of course, and they're like, okay, you've never done this before. Well, this is going to be your first time doing it. We're doing it. Like, let's go. So going off of that, of course, always never overstate your abilities and always be honest and always voice if you're not comfortable. But also, it's going to be scary. Like, it's going to be scary the first time doing things. It's going to be terrifying doing a procedure you've never done, or and also have a little bit of confidence and trust in yourself that you've made it this far. Always ask for help when you need help. But you're going to feel good when you do that first lat repair, that first complex lat repair. You're going to be like, wow, I can do that. Probably before that, didn't think you're going to do a good job, and then you end up doing it and you're like, wow, I did this, and it feels great. It's amazing. So I would say always be humble, always ask for help, but have a little bit of confidence in your abilities as well, because you're going to be expected to do things, and you're going to be thrown into doing procedures, and you're always going to have that support there. But you're right now working as an M4, and next year you're going to be an intern. And this is the time where you're going to be building those skills. So an intern year, you're going to come, having some of those skills prepared.
And Nikki, if you don't have anything else to comment on like EM stuff, I would say for neurology, there isn't a lot of hands-on, I would say procedures. Procedure-wise, the main thing that we do is a lumbar puncture. And for that, we're not really like lumbar punctures have to be, super sterile and there's like all that stuff. So we can help assist as M4s, but I haven't been typically asked to like, try and stick in a needle, full disclosure. So there's that, but their neuro exam is very hands-on in and of itself. There's a lot you're touching the patient all over, strength, reflexes, coordination, etc. So, and there's special maneuvers that if you learn how to do them with confidence properly after practicing them on your OAs, and then you do them like at your subsequent OA or something like that, they will be so impressed with you. So definitely have your foot forward in wanting to do maneuvers with patients or procedures on patients as well. I think that's going to be a huge leg up. And
Yeah,
yeah.
for sure. I think trying to be enthusiastic is a kind of general advice for all of rotations. But being enthusiastic for procedures is part of it as well. I wouldn't jump in and ask for a procedure that you think would be outside of the scope of medical school. Like, I wouldn't ask, can I do the lumbar puncture on this patient? But recognizing when a procedure is definitely within the M4 skill set, saying, like, oh, I see that we have a lac repair. Do you want me to go do it? Can I go grab the materials for it? Should I go ask the nurse to pull the lidocaine? Things like that. Just being enthusiastic and letting them know that you are there and you are willing to be helpful, and they can maybe give you those procedures so you can get that practice and experience.
Yeah, don't be afraid to ask, because the worst you can hear is no. Like, let's say EM, a big one is like intubations. It's hard because obviously if you're with
One's
a place that
tricky.
has residents and has interns, a lot of the intubations go to the interns. But if you're in a place that doesn't have a lot of residents, I've seen students do intubations just because they asked, can I do this intubation? And they get that opportunity. So definitely be
All about
enthusiastic.
reading the room. It's all
Yes,
about
reading the
reading the room.
room. That's
Yes,
like a
yes.
huge part of, I think one of the biggest things to succeed is reading the room. Definitely knowing how to work with different people and reading the room, knowing where to stick yourself and where not to stick yourself. It's like literally 90% of it.
And on that note, after appropriately reading the room for a month on your rotation, but maybe sooner, we will be asking hopefully for a letter of recommendation or some letter of evaluation for yourself as a student. These are, strategic in a way. There's a lot of things to consider when asking for a letter of recommendation, and I'll go into a couple of them. But the rest of the group, you guys can also chime in. So from the neurology perspective and from where I'm coming from, I needed letters from attendings, and it didn't have to be from a big or small institution. It's really about somebody who can speak to your character, and I think that's a key point to all letters. Somebody that knows you well, that can comment on who you are as a person as well, maybe an anecdote or two. And I think it's appropriate when you ask that you give the caveat of, I think the time that we've spent together has been super valuable. I've learned so much. You've been a great mentor for this week or whatever. Or I just like, give them the feedback that you have from the week about, how you spent your time, and then say if you are comfortable. I would really like to ask you for a letter, or I think you'd be a great letter writer for me if you agree with this. Like, I think it would be wonderful for you to, write this letter, and I can help you execute the letter. I can give you my CV, I can give you my resume, my potential application for ERAS with my extracurriculars. I can give you my personal statement if that would help to write the letter as well. And then you can always say, and of course, if you don't feel comfortable, that's totally fine. I just wanted to ask, and I felt it was appropriate, but everybody can decide to do it or not. And the way that I approached it was hopefully somebody who I felt was already an advocate for me and somebody who I felt like was an ally in my journey. So if I was getting positive feedback or good praise throughout the week about something, then I knew that this person kind of had my back. Even if it was that I've only known them for a short amount of time, I could tell that they had a positive attitude towards me. And I think that's super important. If you're working with somebody that you can't really tell what the vibe is, then maybe try and ask, somebody else if possible, even if you've known them for a shorter amount of time. What are your guys' thoughts?
Are you asking in person or are you sending emails?
I asked in person. I asked basically, so for one of them, it was a month-long rotation, and I knew I was going to work with this attending for quite a bit of the month. And it was actually two attendings. So I've asked both of them at the beginning. I'm like, hey, I'm going into neurology. I'm here because I want to do this. I want to put my best foot forward. Please let me know how I can, do well in this rotation and achieve enough so that you would maybe feel comfortable at the end of these 4 weeks writing me a letter. And so by that, you're already establishing that you're invested, you care about what you're doing, you're looking for their feedback, you think it's important, and the expectation that you want them to evaluate you formally at the end. So now they're paying attention to you as the rotation is going by. And that's also huge because if you wait to ask them at the end, then maybe they forgot a lot of what already happened, and that would suck.
Yeah, I cannot agree more. I think that, everyone says to choose someone that you think will evaluate you well and that you think you spent a lot of time with. The best way to set yourself up for success for that is to ask them at the beginning of the rotation, say, "Hey, I'm doing this away. Is there any way you would be able to write me a letter of rec afterwards if we spent enough time together?" Largely echoing what Christina said, be specific. Tell them you can provide them with certain details if they want it. Make sure they feel comfortable writing you the letter. But never feel embarrassed, like, oh, this, you know, I'm embarrassed. I'm the student asking for a letter. You're a student on an away rotation, and every single one of these people went through medical school and knows what that's like, even if it is 50 years ago. Like that, they still have the knowledge, and they still should know enough about the process to be like, yes, we will obviously write you a letter. Also, if they say no for whatever reason, all you say is thank you so much, and move on. Like, you do not have to dwell on it. It does not have to be like, oh, why? Or like, give me some feedback. No, that's not the time or place. You say thank you move on, and you read the room from there.
Yeah, I would say thank you, but I definitely would not mentally move on. That would stress me out. That's
Oh no, I'll be thinking about it every single day, but
keeping me up at night.
yeah, definitely. That's so
So,
funny.
what do you do if the attending is like, yeah, write me a letter and I'll sign it?
That happens.
Ooh, that
Do you do
happens.
it? Do you write the letter?
You know what? You write yourself a bomb letter. And you write great anecdotes, and you make sure that if even if they don't ask you to write the letter, make sure that in the follow-up email where you're telling that person after the conversation, you say, thank you so much for agreeing to write this letter. Here's the documents that you asked to help, craft the letter. I'm also attaching a small list of anecdotes of things that I either accomplished this week or that we patients we saw together that I felt impacted my experience. And then they have stuff to write because these people are so busy and they want you to make it as easy as possible for them. And I think just giving them all the ingredients to make that super, super efficient for them is super important. They'll love you even more after that.
Nikki with the hard questions. That was
I would write it myself and then be like, this was the best student I've ever had. And say,
a
sign it.
gas yourself up. They
And
want to
sign.
yourself as well. They want to know, like, oh, did I actually put 100% into this for sure? And also on the question, I know of, like, should you ask somebody who's more well known, like maybe a chair of a department or a director of a program
Chair.
or a chair, whatever. Ask the person, get a mix of both, but try to ask the person who knows you best because reputation will only take you so far. Generic letters, people know what they look like. Programs know what these generic letters look like. And if it's a well-known program that puts out a lot of these letters, like even more so that they are going to know it was copy and paste. So don't put yourself in that situation. That's my advice.
Yeah. Yeah. So for emergency medicine, we don't have letters of recommendation, or you can upload them, but they are in addition to what I mentioned before is required, which are SLOWs or SLOWEs. I hear people say them both ways, which are standardized letters of evaluation. And in emergency medicine, usually when you're rotating, you might only work with each attending one time and each resident one time. And so you don't get the opportunity necessarily to build those relationships for a letter of recommendation. So at the end of each shift, whoever you work with will fill out an evaluation. Usually you have to remind them to do so, but not necessarily. And someone within the program will then compile all of those evaluations that you get from each of your shifts into one letter. And that letter is then sent to the programs. And basically, it will have notes about you, anecdotes about you from those evaluators. It will be scored as well. So there's lots of questions, like, so it might be professionalism on a scale of 0 to 5. So they're giving lots of little scores. And then at the end, there will also be how they rank you. So it'll say if you are in the bottom 10th percentile, the middle third, those kinds of things, and how they would rank you on their rank list. So that's just kind of a different experience for emergency medicine. Again, you need to ask the program before you ever show up to the away rotation and say, I'm going to be needing a SLO from this rotation. You might want to meet with the program director or whoever is the SLO writer so that you can kind of build that relationship and let them know if there's any information they need about you. And then just put your best foot forward every day. But it is nicer that you don't have to
Yes.
ask a single attending for an evaluation. That's one of the benefits.
That's one of the benefits, but at the same time, so it's not really per se a letter of recommendation, it's a letter of evaluation. So, you can't get away from if there is a certain aspect that is not evaluating you in the best light, you can't really get away from it. Unlike a letter of recommendation that you work with an attending that you have a good experience with, you know most likely you're going to get a good evaluation from that person. This it's every single day. So whoever you worked with, the attending or chief resident, whoever is doing the evaluations, will fill out an evaluation on you. So every single day you have to really show up and do your best. Which I mean is just typical of any sub-I, but you're thinking every day for 4 weeks, it's difficult. You might have a slip up where one day you're late. You might have an issue where one day you forget something about a patient presentation. And these things, depending on who you work with, they could end up on the evaluation. So just be careful. Be your best self. And really, I think that's one of the benefits of the slowies is that not having to ask, but that's just something to keep in mind that it is an evaluation overall and you are being like scored through that evaluation.
Yeah.
So
Did you guys have any experiences where you asked for a letter and then they took forever to upload it or didn't upload
no, my God, mine were so speedy. It's
amazing.
insane. I got so lucky.
I also got lucky. I think within a week of asking all of them, I just mass emailed all of them separately, of course, and asked, and then within a week all of them were uploaded. But I know that some people do have trouble getting their letters uploaded on time, so just the recommendation is the generic, like just ask early and give yourself enough time to send follow-up emails in a not so uncomfortable or annoying way.
And also, I don't know how it is for the other application programs, but for ERAF, once you add somebody as a letter writer, they're supposed to get periodic email reminders if they haven't submitted one.
Oh,
And so
that's
that kind of
nice.
also does an extra boop for you in addition to your own email. So there's that.
I would definitely recommend if you have the opportunity to over ask for letters. Get one more letter of recommendation than you actually need to submit so that you have a kind of
A
backup
buffer.
in case someone doesn't give it through to you. You're not like, well, now I'm not gonna match because I never got a letter of recommendation.
3 to 4 letters. Like if you have four letters, you're safe.
Exactly. So ask for that
Definitely.
extra one.
I think we can kind of go into our key takeaways for this session. So everybody should give, a couple of thoughts on being in a sub-I or in a wave rotation, I think my key takeaways would be, I know finance is it's a huge topic for some people when deciding whether or not to do a WAYS and if they're even feasible. So please look into scholarships. They exist. I'm a huge proponent of them. They definitely helped me do one away that I wouldn't have been able to do without it. And also, you gotta find a balance between keeping your guard up and being a professional, but also being a normal human being around people and having them see that they might want to work with you someday. You don't have to be stiff and never tell a joke, but you have to really read the room.
Yep, completely agree. I think that one of the things you should keep in mind is that you are still the student, but that does not mean you are in the backseat role or the observer role. This is the time for you to be a little bit more active and a little bit more engaged than your other M3 counterparts. And part of that could just be literally like showing the M3s how to be a good M3. That's what I did on one of my aways, and I got really good feedback for taking the time to show the M3s that were just starting out in surgery, like, this is how you scrub, this is where do you go, this is what gloves look, the gloves you should get and look like. So it's about reading the room, and it's about kind of making yourself helpful. And honestly, you will do fine. Just make sure your attitude's in the right place, and you'll get better with every away. So.
So my thoughts, going off of that, being self-aware, aware of your surroundings, like everyone said, reading the room is one of the most, it's like 90% of it. Knowing how to work with different types of people, being adaptable, and really knowing your place in the team and knowing how you can be helpful is such a big part of success in your sub internships or in your away rotations. Have that level of self-awareness and it will take you very far. The other thing is what we talked about before, which is having integrity and being honest and making sure you take accountability for things. That's so important and such a good skill to have now, because remember, at the end of the day, you're going to be responsible for people's health and for people's lives. And the biggest thing you need to have is integrity and honesty. And you can have that from the beginning. It's gonna be so much better for you if you're honest than if you lied about doing something. It's gonna just take you way, way further.
Yeah. My key takeaway would be that 100% of the time when you are in that span of your rotation, and even before you start your rotation, you are being evaluated. So make sure that you are being enthusiastic all the time. Go to the socials with the residents because you are also evaluating if the program's the right fit for you. But remember that even at social events where alcohol might be involved, you are being evaluated. This is basically still an interview all of the time. And, evaluate if it's the right fit for yourself as well. Think about, are these the attendings and residents that I want to spend the next 3 to 5 to 7 years with? Is this the program I want to learn from? Am I getting the experiences I want?
All great advice. And with that, we hope some of these tips will help you to become a successful fourth year med student on your sub-Is and your away rotations. As always, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Sink or Swim.
Subscribe.
Like, comment, subscribe.